Just 2 days left until the start of training camp here in Berea. It's Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. I'm Dave DiNatale. Now, I want to clear up something right here and right now as we start this show. Matt Wilhelm is here. He has not been taking 18 straight days of vacation or whatever Tony Rizzo accused
there
you of doing.
There are 21 working days in the month of July as the calendar sets here in front of us, okay? And Nathan Zagura and myself have to get in as much vacation as we can amongst June and July because once we are in, which actually starts tomorrow, we are committed through the new year. I myself have worked 12 of those 21 working days. Nathan Zagura, when it's all said and done, will have worked five of those 21 working days. So, Riz, I've been putting in some work, and I am here, okay? It's you got the wrong CBD guy on that.
Zagura back tomorrow. And Gibbs is also back tomorrow. Until then, you get me. And you also get Brown senior writer Andrew Gribble here as well. Gribbs, now, you haven't had a lot of working days in the building, but to clear up, you've been on parental duty, and that's been like twice a working day for you.
I will only be two CBDs in July short of Nathan Zagura, though, and I have had a child during this time. So I'm catching up to him. I logged many at the end of June, even though it was dicey there. Wondered if there was the baby was going to pull me out in late June, but she came 9 days late, so we're all set. But I'm back. I'm in the building. I'm working now, so we're good to go.
Yes. Now, coming up today on CBD, we've got Kevin Acey, a terrific writer for the San Diego, out in San Diego. I don't have it in front of me.
Union Tribune.
The Union Tribune. And he's also Action 1090.
Mighty 1090.
The Mighty.
Yes. Mighty 1090.
That's what happens when
he's
I don't have it in front of me. He's very good.
He's good.
So we'll have him at 2 o'clock today. Our final opponents preview of the year. I basically messed up all Kevin's credentials there, but we'll get him right when we have him on there. The Browns will play the Chargers on Christmas Eve, December 24th, at First Energy Stadium. So it'll be our final opponent preview. We'll talk to him at 2 o'clock. We'll go around the league at 2:30. We may have a CBD replay. We may not. We're still efforting that. But along the way, plenty of time for you. It is a Wednesday, so it's a mailbag Wednesday. Tweet your questions for Matt Wilhelm and Andrew Gribble using the hashtag AskCBD at Browns_daily. We'll spend a lot of time getting to those questions. You can also call us. 216-578-0850 is our number. 216-578-0850. Guys, as we get more and more of the Browns here into Berea to start training camp, there was some injury news and notes yesterday, Gribbs. First and foremost, Josh Gordon is back, and he was in the building yesterday, but we're not going to see him out on the field. For those hoping to see him out in the field Friday catching passes, it's going to take a little time.
Yeah, at least a couple weeks, as was mentioned yesterday. It's just an injured quadriceps, and you know this – When you're working out by yourself, not with a team, for as long as he has been, those things seem to be inevitable. You're going to pull some muscles, injure yourself. Maybe he was trying to get back a little too hard, get back into shape, but he'll be out for a couple weeks. Maybe that's where this four-game suspension actually helps, the fact that he won't have to really rush himself back those couple weeks at the end of training camp. The other two big the notable names from that injury list, Joe Hayden starts training camp on PUP. I don't think that's too much of a surprise. I think his timeline was to be back at some point during training camp, not necessarily the start of it, but you know, we've been told that this is not a surprise at all. It's part of the plan and part of the what he's timelined on how he's going to return. And then rookie tight end Seth Devolve's got a hamstring injury. He's on PUP as well. Uncertain when he'll be ready to go during training camp.
And Gary Barnage may or may not, right? Also start on PUP.
But he is not on PUP right now.
He's not on PUP right now, but he may or may not.
It could change.
And guys, you know what's one thing that's very interesting to me, and it's, you know, over the last 6 weeks since the players have essentially been done with off-the-season workouts or mandatory workouts, either, you know, I'll say voluntary or mandatory throughout OTAs and minicamp is we've always talked about, well, what are, you know, either on Dog Pound Report or on this show, what are guys doing at this point in the offseason? And I always talked about, you know, going back home, especially from San Diego, coming to the Northeast Ohio area, being here for about a week or 10 days, then hitting my vacation, and then for about 3 to 4 weeks, mandatory, at least for me, and I learned this from other guys that it worked for them, it was getting back into my craft and getting back into the city, because there was nothing better than, you know, is showing face in this building a bad thing? No. It's a great thing for the coaches and trainers and management and salespeople and radio personalities,
yes,
seeing the players in this building so that we can reference that they're, it seems as if they're dedicated to their craft. But in Josh Gordon's case, and I know he's been working out on his own, and I'm just kind of referencing him and an injury like this, but also the guys that have been here, I wanted to come back because I'm in my comfort zone, you know, not at LA Fitness or at a fitness center or a training facility, you know, measuring myself amongst, you know, the common man or even other guys that are coming in and maybe, you know, younger guys that are pushing themselves harder, whereas like I'm a vet, I got to get in the shape, the best shape for me, not in the shape for you. But I loved having the strength and conditioning coaches here to monitor me. But even still, when a quad injury or something like that happened, I love having the trainers, like the training room, right there.
Yes.
To go get an ice bag, to put some heat on it, to massage it out, to get some stim. It's those resources that you have when you're a part of that building. And I think in Josh Gordon's case, being here throughout training camp and those first 4 weeks being in this building, it's about that playbook. It's about growing him and nurturing him back onto the football field so that when he hits the field, he is the best Josh Gordon we can get.
And that was clear, and it was made clear in the release yesterday. Josh Gordon reported yesterday, met with Hugh Jackson, met with Sashi Brown, other members of the organization, and you almost wonder, some of these injuries that can happen in off-season workouts when they're away from the building, he might not even known he even had this kind of injury or thought it was something minor, and
right,
then the trainers looked at it and it realized,
right,
he had to shut it down. I mean, if he hadn't reported he was still working on his own, he might be doing even further damage to that injury. So I think with him and knowing that he's going to miss the first four games, I'm assuming this is as precautionary as it gets because there's no need to rush him back when he's not even available till the start of October.
Sure, and I think even more so, and I've mentioned that before as we've talked about the conditioning test, that's what this is for. It's a gauge of who's been working,
yep,
you know, working out and in football shape. And it's not technically game shape, but football shape, and who hasn't. And then guys like Josh, had he not, maybe he slid through his physical, or maybe he brought this up that, hey, I got a little twinge in my quad. If he didn't say that and they didn't find it, he would have hit the field potentially tomorrow at 4 p.m. and run that conditioning test, and it might have worsened that injury.
Yes.
Had he not vocalized that, or had the trainers not, you know, really gave him a thorough up and down, that, because that test forces you just out of your comfort zone enough and is enough work for you to expose a tight hammy, a bad hip, a quad, of something of that sort.
You just don't want happen what happened last year to Terrell Pryor.
Right.
It seemed like he was doing a lot of workouts that he didn't normally do in his life because he wasn't a wide receiver up until last summer. Did a ton of work with a lot of NFL players over the offseason, came in, and then within a few days his hamstring was barking, and it really just limited his ability to give the Browns a player that could contribute,
yeah,
week one, and that's why ultimately he wasn't with the team through most of that season until he was brought back at the end of the year. So easier now to get it out of the way, get him ready, and make it sure when he is on the field, it's already going to be a whirlwind for him getting back into football for the first time in a couple years. Make sure he is 100% healthy when he does it.
Matt, back to this thought of, you know, you as a player coming back, you know, a week, 2 weeks, or whatever before the start of the mandatory report day, before the start of camp. Did you find were you an exception to the rule, or were a lot of veterans doing the same types of things, whether it be it in San Diego or in Green Bay, or were it just maybe a handful of your teammates doing that? I'm curious as to.
I felt when the way in which I approached the offseason after my first couple of years was I was following suit for that had worked for veterans that have been in the league at that point 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and even still, I think if you look, I think it popped up on Bleacher Report, but Russell Wilson, you know, in some of his Instagram posts of his workouts and what he's doing, it's, you don't have those 22-year-old legs anymore, but and he's taken, you know, a lot of reps and played a lot of football over the last three seasons. What can he do to maintain that shape and to be the best Russell Wilson as now a 25, 26-year-old Russell Wilson? So it's really learning and a little bit of trial and error. And then you also, when you're in the locker room, you rub elbows with those vets. Where are you going? Where are you training? What should I be doing? Who should I be working with? And I know that is the, you know, the marketplace now is those, you know, training facilities that are, you know, almost like combine prep.
Yeah.
So it gets you ready for the combine with all your testing, but then it also allows you to do all the necessary things, you know, the sand pit workouts and the field turf and the stairs running, as well as all the Olympic lifts that they might do when they get back to Berea downstairs.
From a standpoint of family, you know, look, you know, I have an off-season home. If you're Matt Wilhelm, you might have had an off-season home here in Ohio,
right?
And you got to go back to San Diego. you know, does that play a part too? You know, it's like, you know, I got to get back in the zone, but it's a week. Well, it's a week or two. I could still be at home with you know, spending time with
sure.
the family.
Yeah, it was difficult for me to find exactly what I wanted and needed outside of San Diego, because it became, you know, that becomes your home. Your facility becomes your home base. And I found, you know, one other place with a great group of guys that would train from all over the National Football League. We would all train together, you know, hit the field, do the ball drills, but then also go put the work in the weight room. And I couldn't find that here in Northeast Ohio. And a lot of that had to do with, you know, there were no facilities for stuff like that.
Right.
You know, when I was playing, there are now. And I also, and I've said this before, when the off season hits, every single morning you wake up, you have that opportunity to go to the gym or not go to the gym, to eat that
yep.
this food or not eat this food, or to go out the night before or to not go out the night before. And that all affects, you know, that next day or in the day after that. Whereas if you're dedicated to your craft, when you're in that city, it feels like I've got to go into the facility, like I said, to show face, to put in work. And to get to have all the instruments, I guess you could say, that play a part in allowing you to get ready to play the game of football.
See, we always hear these players who played a while ago talk about how training camp used to be the time where players had to work themselves back into shape. That used to be what training camp was for. I'm wondering if was there a difference for you at the start of your career to the end of your career about how acceptable it was to work yourself into shape? And
yeah.
At the beginning, or
yes.
Has that like transformed?
It definitely has transformed, and I think. It what old training camp was, it you had to get mentally ready, and then throughout training camp you got physically ready. And I think in this case it's really hard under these, you know, training camp parameters, I mean, in the collective bargaining agreement, to really go out and get yourself in shape, because there's so much downtime.
Right.
You know, you're not it, that's why you see so many guys. There weren't guys running gassers after practices in the old CBA,
right.
Because you put it out there, you took the 3 hours of break, you came back and you did it again for another 3 hours on the field. Guys were spent. You weren't running gassers after practice to get in shape, because practices was your conditioning. And in this case, we saw it last year, you know, and it's a good thing to see, but when guys go through a 2.5 hour practice, you shouldn't have a whole lot of juice left, you know, running, you know, 10 half gassers
right.
after practice. It should be. All of that should have gone into practice, and maybe one or two to kind of fully expense yourself as you spend the next, you know, I don't know, you know, 12 to 14 hours recovering. So it is something where you got to come in ready to play, because especially for guys, and we've had this, you know, conversation before, that those, I don't want to say bottom of the barrel, that's the wrong thing to say, but the guys who are on the cusp of either, you know, the bottom quartile of this roster
mm-hmm.
and the guys who are fighting to make this team, they're not going to get a lot of reps. And the last thing you want to do is when you do get reps, and they're going to get a lot of reps in those early preseason games, the second half of that first one, you know, also the second half of the second game, and then the fourth game, is to not be in shape. That's the absolute worst thing you can do, because it's bad film, it's a bad representation for you, and all the teams get to see that film.
I just wonder, yeah, we've talked about Gribbs Camp Hugh when he comes in. How many more hitting practices and full go practices will we see this time around in training camp, maybe compared to a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
We don't have any specifics on that, but it seems like he's indicated it'll be more. And I think it might be more than is what even is recommended by people in the strength and conditioning business, because that's the way he wants this camp to operate. And he made that clear during OTAs. And I'm just expecting, it's not the physical stuff I'm expecting. I'm expecting the pace of these practices to be at a much more noticeable high level, because that's what we saw already during OTAs and minicamp. We saw things moving faster. You know, he's an offensive-minded guy. I think the trend in the NFL is to get your offense moving faster. I certainly think it's pretty much believed by offensive coordinators that it is an advantage against the defense. You see it in college football. You're seeing it more in the NFL. You need guys in better shape. And to do that, you got to use every bit of your practice time to get guys in that football shape to move fast. So you won't see guys walking between drills. They're moving
right
and maximizing those hours. Cause like you said, you used to be able to practice more than you can right,
right
now.
So yeah. And I think the key word that we're going to take that is the mentality of Hugh Jackson and the, either the Chip Kelly offense is stress. How do we stress the mind of these young men, you know, to mm-hmm. overcome and still think thoroughly and think through what their job and responsibility is in a certain defense when they're exhausted. How do we push their body to the limit but not too far? And that's something that, you know, the strength and conditioning staff and the trainers are going to monitor. And Hugh Jackson's going to push that threshold on a daily basis, which I don't think has been done in the past. And you talked about the tempo of the offense and how they function and break that huddle and get to the line of scrimmage is to stress the defense. Now, can the defense then do that to the offense with the 3-4 defense, their looks, their blitzes, all the things like that? Stress is the main key. How can these coaches stress these players and an offense stress a defense and vice versa to the benefit of the Cleveland Browns?
We've got some questions coming in on Twitter. Again, use the hashtag AskCBD. Tweet the show at Browns_daily, 216-578-0850. Also coming up on the show today, our final position preview is going to spotlight on the running backs, and in particular Isaiah Crowell, Duke Johnson. So we'll be looking at that, plus a couple of names in that running back position that maybe you haven't heard of, but should keep an eye on as camp gets underway as well. That is all straight ahead. It's Cleveland Browns Daily as we get closer and closer to the start of training camp here in Berea, and you're listening to ESPN 850 WKNR. Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR as we get closer to training camp. Starts on Friday. Players will be here tomorrow. Was it 4 o'clock you guys said conditioning run?
Yes. 4 p.m.
4 p.m. And Gribbs, I think Hugh Jackson's going to also address the media tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yes. Looks like Hugh Jackson, Sashi Brown, and Paul DePodesta.
What time is that?
Noon.
Oh, nice.
Oh, there you go.
Right, leading right into CBD.
Perfect. So the... Because Zagura, well, because it wouldn't be any other way.
Zagura will be back, and it'll feel just like vacation because we're going to have 45-plus minutes of sound from those three. And we'll be doing next to no talking.
So, again, if you got questions for the guys, 216-578-0850. On Twitter, Browns_daily, like G.I. George. Guys, we've spent a lot of time talking about Josh Gordon's suspension. What about Armonte Bryant? Is he allowed to be here for training camp in the preseason before he serves his 4-game suspension?
Yeah, I mean, he'll be here for training camp, and then it's similar to Josh Gordon. I don't know the specifics on if he's allowed in the building or not. I'm not sure about that.
That's a good question. It is a good question.
Yeah, I'll have to see on that, but he's a guy that will be.
Because it was PEDs, right?
But yeah, I'm not sure. I forget which, you know, it's hard to keep track. Yeah. But he's a talented player who is a great pass rusher, but I think with a new coaching staff, he's going to have to prove himself.
Right.
He's going to have to prove that he belongs once that suspension is over. So I think he's a guy to watch in training camp. Also along the lines of suddenly outside linebackers, a crowded position, and you have some more needs on defensive line. We might be seeing him more on the defensive
line. Yeah, that's exactly what we talked about. He's going to have to be, you know, the other day we did the defensive line. He may have to prove not only to be talented, but also flexible and be able to possibly go to that D-line spot, you know, as a spot of need.
And D-line is his more comfortable position.
I think
it was a big transition last year for him to be standing up, and really a lot of the time when he was on the field he wasn't coming from a standing up position.
Correct.
I mean, he was on the D-line and in nickel situations and things like that. So again, he's a great pass rusher. We've seen what he's capable of doing. It's just you got to be available, you got to be on the field, and I think that's why this is an important training camp.
Correct. And the one thing that and I think it's why we at least why I listed the defensive line as my largest concern is I just don't want to put a Band-Aid at what was going to be probably our most productive, solid position along the defensive line, meaning, you know, Armonte Bryant would be a Band-Aid for the 5 technique, you know, the Dez Bryant that, you know, created with his injury, that void. You know, Xavier Cooper maybe can grow into that position if he's going to be exclusively there. I want 11 guys that are playing the proper position on Ray Horton's defense. I don't want this guy, we can move him here, we can move him here. Nassib's going to be a situational guy. Joe Schobert's going to be a situational guy. Barkevious Mingo's probably going to be a situational guy. Kaywan Williams as a nickelback is already kind of a situational guy. I don't want situational guys. I want 11 starters that deserve to start at the position that they are playing. No more Band-Aids, especially at the start of the season.
Yeah, that's why I'm curious. I couldn't even project your starting 11 if you're lining up in the base 3-4
right
for the opener, because I just don't know is it Xavier Cooper that you plug right in. Is he the one that makes the most sense? Is it going to be Nick Hayden?
Those are
possibilities for that spot, but there's no just easy fill in, and it's just you know, it's crazy how, in hindsight, how irreplaceable Desmond Bryant is on this defense.
Yeah.
It's just a really tough injury.
And I have a hunch, and only because, I mean, unless Xavier Cooper, to me, can become extremely productive exclusively at the five technique position, which is where Des was playing in his defense throughout the entire training camp, and wins that position and becomes, you know, the stitches, mm-hmm. you know, for Des Bryant, not the Band-Aid.
Yeah, the stitches, the staples.
I wouldn't be surprised if the conversations are being had by scouts that we sign a guy, and I consistently say it, that might have gotten a little expensive with where he's at, but he's in that 4 to 7 year range, kind of like Nick Hayden, you know, that gets cut off of maybe a $2 or $3 million contract. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little pricey, and maybe a young player's outplaying him or the equivalent to that player on whatever roster he's on. He gets cut if we're not in the market for that guy at that point.
Yeah, and it's hard to project this because you don't know what other teams are going to do, but impact players do become available during this time of year.
Yeah.
Just look at what happened with the Cardinals last year with Dwight Freeney,
yeah.
getting him week 5 or
right,
something like
right.
that in the season. Had an impact on the team down the stretch. So there's going to be opportunities to fill that void.
Sure.
I'm sure they can predict maybe who's going to get released, but you don't know until it actually
right.
happens.
And I think in some cases what plays out is a draft pick, maybe a mid to late round draft pick is better, you know, once training camp starts, and it starts to put the question in the head, first for the coaches, second for the management, and going, hey, we got this kid, you know, on a 3-year deal for $1.2 million over the course of that 3 years, and we're paying this guy $5 or $4 or $3 million just for this year. And we think if we can groom him, and of course you talk to the coaches and they say, yeah, we're liking where he's headed. Mm-hmm. They have that conversation, and a guy with that big number gets released at a certain point in the first 2 weeks of camp, instead of, you know, forcing him through and then making him a last cut. You cut part ways with him. A, to the benefit of your team to give that young guy more reps, also to the benefit of that player to allow him the opportunity to catch on somewhere else. And for us, it would be, you know, a 1 year vet minimum salary for the Cleveland Browns.
And look at last year. We were on the opposite end of this.
Yep.
That week before the first game of the season, there's a lot of trades that yep. happened. And the Browns last year traded Billy Winn for a conditional pick.
That's right.
The Colts had a need. The Browns had probably too many linemen that were similar to Billy Winn. I think
yep.
that was the reason. I wouldn't say they were flush with depth. It was just a lot of redundancies.
Hughes and Cooper and Winn.
And so Winn became a guy they could trade, and the Colts, it was, you look at it almost as pardon the pun, but like a win-win trade, because you're getting that pick for a guy you weren't planning on needing, and the Colts got a guy that they could fill in, play 20, 25 snaps
correct.
A
game. It made me think, though, when you, Gribbs, you were talking, if you're saying, okay, pencil in your starters for September 11th in Philadelphia on that defense. I mean, there are question marks and position battles that are going to on that defensive side that are going to be absolutely intriguing and could take all 4 weeks of preseason to sort out.
Yeah, probably more on defense than offense position battles. I think you look at defensive line, you probably look at John Hughes, Danny Shelton, and then the question mark where Desmond Bryant goes. Outside linebacker, you've got Kruger, probably Nate Orchard or Emmanuel Ogba in some capacity. Your inside linebackers are set, it looks like, at least with Kirksey and DeMario Davis. And then the uncertainty with Joe Hayden, is he going to be ready for the opener? He thinks he will be, but he's got to get on the field and get
right.
back into comfortable shape. And then I wouldn't feel comfortable just writing someone in at Penn at either of the safety positions right now. I think those are wide
right,
open
yeah.
as well. So a lot of spots out there that we'll be covering all week.
One quick question month. For you, and I know towards the end of OTAs and that vet minicamp was Pierre Desir taking reps at safety. Do you think he opens camp? I think he opens camp yeah. as a corner, but do you think because of the depth at corner that safety might be his best opportunity to make this football team?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's the opportunity there. I think he would still – it would be a tough – way to get into that four. You're thinking probably going to keep
correct.
Four safeties because you look at Ibrahim Campbell, Jordan Poyer, Derek Kindred,
Raheem Moore.
I mean, those are four guys
yep.
that you would peg at the top of the of the pecking order as of now. But and then it's like there's that cluster at cornerback behind Joe Hayden, that kind of Pierre Desir, Justin Gilbert, Charles Gaines,
yep.
and a bunch of undrafted guys,
yeah.
Trey Caldwell, who looks maybe like a kind of a nickel
mm-hmm.
kind of potential guy, but and then Tracy Howard, guys you brought in that, you know, that could emerge and claim that spot. But that's why there's really no clear answer right now behind Joe Hayden or
right.
Tron
and then
Williams.
You,
that's
even when you look at the, you know, whereas Trey Caldwell looks like a nickel, you've got K'Juan Williams, you got Jamar Taylor. They're like the 1-2, but Trey Caldwell is your draft pick. Is he a guy that you carry, or is he a guy that you think you can get away on the practice squad? He'll clear waivers, but you throw him on the practice squad. But the number of spots, it becomes a numbers game. And we have the same conversation this time of year every single year. There are only 53, and I think there's an offensive head coach, and I wouldn't be surprised, even though, you know, that if Ray Horton in meetings would go, I'll take less, you take what you need and give me what's left, or, you know, and maybe just a shade above the minimum that you need. But it's going to be very interesting along the defensive backfield.
And you factor in those core special teamers, a guy that people don't talk about much, but like a player like Don Jones is an exceptional special teams player that could get a job in on the 53-man roster simply by being good at special teams. So it's a tough battle for Pierre. I'm just looking at, there's more bodies to compete with at cornerback, but it's probably harder at safety, a new position with guys who are pre-established there.
Matt, in Hayden's case, you know, you're coming off of surgery and you know, he's working his way back. He says he's going to be ready. Joe's been at this long enough where, you know your body, but at some point, you're going to have to, if you're on the PUP list, man, you've got to be able to pass that physical in order for you to get on the team. It's just one of those things you have to keep an eye on, and the Browns have to trust the doctors, but also, trust Joe and his body that he says he'll be ready to go.
Absolutely. I mean, they definitely do. And then the same conversation we had first segment about guys coming in shape, out of shape, ability to pass that test. Joe Hayden's not going to do any of this.
Right.
Because he's physically unable to perform. And the one thing that we've seen out of Joe in the past was, even when healthy, slow starts and then grows into having a solid football season. Missed a lot of football last year, hasn't done any football this offseason, and not going to start playing football anytime soon. So is he going to be out of shape? I want 11 starters, flying around, giving it their all, because the path is 5 of 7 on the road, and some big games. And I think the more we dig into them, all depending on the opponent, they can be some winnable games. If we can get to, and I continue to say it, and I will all season long, that 5 to 6 minute mark in the fourth quarter, can we get there close and allow, is Joe Hayden in tip-top form to make that pass breakup, to cover their number one guy and lock him down, get that stop and allow RG3, Josh McCown, and our playmakers on offense one more crack at the end zone.
We'll get to the offense here coming up. We'll move up our position battle. We have one more position preview to look at here before we kind of really get back to a normal show tomorrow here on Cleveland Browns Daily, the running backs position. We will focus on that coming up next as Isaiah Crowell, Duke Johnson, and company get ready to run on the field and be an important part of this new offense for Hugh Jackson. We'll take a look at the running backs coming up next. It's Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR from the Dog Bowl in Berea on this countdown to the start of training camp. Training camp starts on Friday. Players will be here tomorrow to make sure they can pass their conditioning test, baby.
Yeah, a lot of players here now.
Yeah, when we were walking down, you and I were in the lunchroom. Some players were down there, and you could definitely tell there's a lot of, just everybody's excited in here in Berea.
Definitely.
It's like, let's get the, there's been so much change in this offseason and the new coach and questions and new quarterback and everything. It's like, let's just get on the field. Let's get it on. Let's get this started.
Absolutely.
And you feel that vibe in here. It's like,
sure.
Friday, even tomorrow, just to have the players running. They're not looking forward to it, but just to get out on the field, I think everybody, it's going to be like an explosion of, okay, I'm ready. Let's go. Let's do this.
Absolutely. And I think, even for the guys that are here, and I talked about showing face, in some cases, that's all they're doing. It's come in, familiarize themselves with some of the renovations, talk with your coaches, maybe get, jump on a treadmill for 20 minutes, maybe even, jump in the hot tub, cold tub, that are now readily available to these players, and just be seen and get familiar and just kind of get back into the swing of, you know, of making that drive here every day, find your parking spot, just a little bit of familiarity, you know, amongst you, which makes you a little bit more comfortable instead of just coming in cold turkey, you know, after being away for 3 to 5 weeks. And then you just come in, it's like, oh, where's this? Where's that? Where do I got to go?
It's like being back in high school, remembering where your locker is and everything.
Exactly. You know? It's exactly what it is.
Yeah, just get back into those routines. By the way, if you want to see, and Gribbs, I'm going to make sure I'm right about this, Joe Hayden and Gary Barnage, I believe, at ClevelandBrowns.com, take us on a tour of some of the changes here at the facility. Is that correct?
Yeah, we get that on Snapchat and things like that. So, like I said, for all those new guys, I mean, it's not just you're coming back to a building you're familiar with. I mean, this is downstairs. It's like a brand new building downstairs.
Correct.
Especially, I mean, these renovations were player focused, and it's just a new.
And what is
it's very new down there?
What is the square footage that was added?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay.
It's significant. I mean,
I'd say
you notice
10 to 15,000 square feet.
Yeah. I mean, you notice it most when you are watching practice.
Yeah.
Because it's that whole back of the building.
The new gray portion.
You don't see too much from the front. Like you would wonder
what
renovations are you talking about. But it's really the back of this building basically got blown out and extended into where the fields were just for all new player stuff and really new locker room, things like that.
And I'll tell you what, there's, you know, down on one end on the back side of the building, there's, you know, all new executives offices. You know, I think, you know, Sashi Brown and Paul Di Podesta, their offices are now big and glass. And there's also a balcony out there. And I have to tell this funny story simply because AJ Smith was the general manager of the San Diego Chargers, and his, you know, there was a two-story building, and not only him, but all the coaches' offices were on the backside of the building. But a portion, A.J. Smith's office, the general manager, amongst, I think, the Spanos family, you know, could share that balcony. And there was nothing more intimidating that kept at least me in line was when A.J. Smith, the general manager, the decision maker of whether you had a job or not, was out there overlooking practice with his leg up, watching practice, watching this group, watching this group, watching that guy. It was just kind of like, you know, the eye in the sky is like governing whether you make the football team or not. So you were always jogging.
Yep.
You know, you were always busting your butt when the hawk was out, you know, on the balcony. And I know, so now those decision makers here in Cleveland, not that it'll be the same, but they'll have the ability to go out on that balcony and oversee practice without being on the practice field. And I think for guys like Sashi Brown and Paul Di Podesta, you know, I don't want to say, you know, the quote unquote analytical guys who are not football guys, they can go out there and observe kind of like and have their presence still be felt, but yet not observe the game from the ground level, which sometimes can be hard to decipher and hard to see what's really going on.
Yeah, there's a reason why the press box is high up instead of right on the sidelines. You see the game better. I mean,
correct.
There's all 22 film for a reason.
Yes.
You see everything better from that angle, and that's why from our – when people sometimes ask me what happened to practice, I'm like, I miss some stuff. I mean, you really do miss some things when you're on the field level. So, and that's why coaches are always reluctant to say that they'll
have
to wait for the
film
before they're going to give an honest assessment. So, yeah, I mean, it's just when folks start coming in Thursday, Friday, I think it's just going to be very impressed by what has been done to the back of this building.
All right. So with all that, let's focus now on the running backs position as we have I believe is our final position preview. I don't think we're going to be doing that tomorrow. So today we focus on the running backs. And on the surface, it seems like it's going to be a pretty easy position preview, gentlemen, because Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson. But a couple things here coming into play. First things first, obviously, Isaiah Crowell is going to have a spotlight on him because of the Instagram post. And, you know, people are going to want to talk to him. He's going to have some questions to answer about what he's been doing. And I think secondly, Gribbs, I look at a guy like Terrell Watson, who Tony Grossi interviewed last week on the Hey Tony show. He was the first guy that the Browns, Hugh Jackson, brought in from Cincinnati with him. Must think that maybe, you know, a guy that can come in and compete.
Yeah, I mean, an incredibly productive player in college at Azusa Pacific. Just I think he went to the same high school as Hugh Jackson. There's that connection there, I believe. I'm maybe speaking out of turn with that, but I think the big thing with him is he's just a big physical running back that you can have and maybe potentially use as a third down guy. I mean, you use in a variety of roles. Kind of similar, you look what Cincinnati did with Rex Burkhead, if you're looking for an offensive comparison. But it's you really look at it, you look at every when you're trying to project a 53-man roster, you start with the position minimums for how many guys you're going to keep. And I always put that number at 3 for running backs. Even though last year the Browns entered that first game with only 2 you would like to have three, especially with a guy like Duke Johnson, who's going to be running around, could potentially take some hard hits, might need to be sidelined a little bit. But Watson is a guy to watch. And then the name we've always been hearing for the last couple of years, but we've yet to see it kind of come together, is Glenn Winston.
Yeah.
Still on this team, still has a ton of potential. But you wonder, with a new coaching staff, he's really got to impress if he wants to get on this team.
And Gribbs, I'll ask you this question. With Terrell Watson, he was a, you know, almost like a priority free agent when Hugh Jackson became a coach. There was Hugh Jackson, you know, he needed Al Saunders. He had Pep Hamilton. They were all in the building very early in the process. And at first opportunity, signed Terrell Watson here to the Cleveland Browns, probably because he liked a lot of what he saw in Cincinnati, and he's a budding professional running back. Could Terrell Watson, with his size, 6'1", 240, be in jeopardy, or actually, I'm sorry, go into a battle with Malcolm Johnson, who's going to be a fullback, a move guy in this offense, but a guy in this offense that may or may not even have a role?
I mean, his presence might help you make that decision on whether or not you have a fullback, but I think it's been stressed that he is not a fullback. I guess that's the thing with Watson. Like, he is a running back, and that's what he's here to do. So that's the... I don't know if he's necessarily competing with Malcolm Johnson, but is he someone that maybe makes you, if you're on the fence on whether you're going to keep a fullback or not,
right?
Maybe,
and
that
I guess
makes
that's
the
more
decision.
So what I'm asking.
Yeah, I mean, that's a potential with him, I would think. I
and
mean,
you
he's
can get away
guy.
With a guy like him as a bigger guy.
Right, and but it's one of those things that we will not know until this 53-man roster said if you're going to have a fullback or not. Because even in 2014 with the Browns, it was some weeks you had a fullback on the roster, some weeks
that's
you didn't.
That's right.
So, and last year you had one up until Malcolm Johnson got hurt. And they didn't have one.
Right.
So they didn't replace him with a fullback. So it's just a weird position in the NFL that some teams have, some teams don't. Mm-hmm. And until we see what this offensive coaching staff does, and we'll see how important it is to the offense.
And something that didn't grab my attention, and maybe it grabbed yours or maybe it didn't, but Malcolm Johnson, you know, who's kind of going to be in jeopardy of whether we carry that fullback or not, I don't remember him being all, like, that great of a special teams player, which is going to be a huge portion of the role that he's going to play.
Has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah, when you're on the fence, I mean, special teams are so
correct. Imperative.
So,
and I don't remember him being, you know, a banshee.
Yeah, I don't know if anything sticks out to me with what kind of roles he did have. It was just, he was someone that in training camp, that those first couple weeks was so impressive, kept making plays out of the backfield, catching a lot of passes.
Kind of like EJ Bibbs.
Yeah, got hurt, came back, made the team, but then it didn't come together during the season. I think there was maybe a reluctance to use him on offense much because he was used a bunch in the first game, but then really not much after that until he got hurt. So someone you'd like to see kind of put it together the second season, has some tight end skills. Not necessarily someone you want to give the ball to on carries, but someone that you can use in a number of different spots.
And so I'll ask you two more questions as we're on the running back topic, and I'll kind of put you on the hot seat, and you can take your time if you want. I'll give you Isaiah Crowell rushing yards, best case, worst case scenario, with the number of touches that you believe he'll get in this offense. And then second questions is receptions and receiving yards for Duke Johnson in this offense.
Ooh,
I would
say worst case for a guy like Crowell, if you're going to give him 15, 20 touches a game and he's healthy all season, worst case is what, like
800 yards?
Yeah. I mean, you'd want obviously more than that. And if you're going to give him 15, 20 a game, you want him in that 1,000, 1,100, 1,200 range. But at the same time, we may see more. I look back at what Cincinnati did last year. It seemed like a hot hand mentality.
Yep.
You had Jeremy Hill early. Giovanni Bernard had a big stretch during the middle of the season. And then you go back to your big guy when it starts getting colder.
Sure.
So you wonder if that's the mentality you have with these guys. I would think with Duke Johnson, we might see him carrying the ball more than he did last year. He was used so much as a receiver because his team was so shorthanded at receiver. He needed it. So I would almost expect Duke's receptions to go down, but his productivity to go up in this offense. Because he had a lot of receptions last year, a lot for short gains as well that were just basically they're basically running plays that were counted as receptions.
Sure. With the Crow, we know he's physically tough, but I think early on in camp he may have to be mentally tough because there may be some boos out there. He's working very, very hard to make amends, and I think fans appreciate that. They appreciated that he apologized for it. But he's going to have to be able to deal with it and then move forward.
Yes, 100%. I think Isaiah Crowell, because of what happened, is going to be forced in front of a microphone and is going to be interviewed, and he's going to have to speak and use his words to try to change the connotation of negativity surrounding him. But ultimately, as soon as those words end, what Isaiah Crowell needs to do more than anything, which will hush those boos, which people will stop writing about him, right, and people will just start, is his actions. If he goes out and he's working diligently, and even last year, you know, I think 10 days, 2 weeks into camp, you remember Wilbert Montgomery was questioning his work ethic. Does he really want to be the starter? Does he really want to be the guy? If we don't see those issues and he's proving to be the guy and he's working hard and he's playing well in the preseason, slowly but surely, and I know it won't go away. We know that about the internet. It will never go away. It just drifts further and further into the back of our minds, and we start thinking Isaiah Crowell, the Cleveland Brown football player, running back, in his productivity on the field, not his negative post in the offseason when he wasn't here in his, in, you know, in these quarters.
I said this was going to be a big season for him no matter what.
Right.
I mean, third year, you want to see, you go one of two ways in your third year, I think, especially at that running back position where you're just trying to get to that second contract and make it something worthwhile before you're replaced by a younger guy, which is the, at that position, it's the most of any in the NFL. So it was already going to be a big year. He got a lot of confidence from Hugh Jackson, but every time there was a confident thing that Hugh Jackson said, he also said, we just need to channel what he was able to do against the 49ers. So clearly they're already on him for consistency. So it's just, it's added some maybe more pressure to him, but I think it's something he has to kind of embrace at this point.
And I think so, because, you know, he and Duke Johnson, you know, are 1 year apart. It's, you want to have a bell cow. And I think in today's NFL, you can have, I'll call it two bell cows. Isaiah Crowell can essentially play his way into being the starting running back and a second contract with the Cleveland Browns, and you completely at that point forget about the mishap that happened, because everything he's done thereafter has been the way Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown and the way the Browns want him to play.
I mean, his goal, if he wants to have huge goals for this season, he should look at what happened in Tampa Bay last year. Look at what Doug Martin did in a huge year. He was entering a season where there was basically like, he was the power guy, and Charles Sims was the passing guy. Charles Sims still had a great year, but Doug Martin became one of the best running backs in the
NFL.
Did he
almost lead the league in rushing?
Yeah, and he got a big contract because of it. So he has to look at that as his loftiest goal on what he can do, even when he is in a two-back system.
Right. Last thought on this, guys. Looking back on it now, were you surprised that the Browns, with all the draft picks they had, the 14 draft picks, they didn't take a running back? I mean, they went with, they liked what they had in the room. I mean, they brought in, obviously, Terrell Watson, but, you know, they didn't draft anybody.
It was not a surprise to me, and I think you were very comfortable, as Hugh Jackson said, with both of those guys. You brought in Terrell Watson. You had Glenn. They've got to like Glenn Winston to not address that position, to get younger at that position. But then I think, as many analysts nationally have said, this is a Cleveland Browns, you know, football team that is retooling and has a lot of needs other places. And we saw Sashi Brown hit all those needs head on and made those a priority over the depth at running back.
And I'll just mention one more thing about the running back position. A guy to keep an eye on is Raheem Mostert, not because of what he can do at running back, but I think when you look back last year at the sample size, what he did with his kickoff returns was the best of any of the kickoff returners this team had. And he can earn a job on this team because being a good enough kickoff returner and then potentially being your fourth running back if you decide to keep four guys.
And along those same lines, you just talked about he might be a fourth running back. That therein lies the numbers game that we talked about when we talked about corner and safety. We'll have that same issue at running back. We're going to have that issue at a lot of positions. And as you mentioned yesterday, every team that carries 90 into training camp, which all of them do, are going to have these type of position battles at across both offense and defense.
Well, all of a sudden now, just hearing you talk about that with Mostert, I mean, again, for a guy like Malcolm Johnson, you sit there and you go, boy, do we really need a fullback? Or, you know, we like Crowell, we like Johnson, we like Watson, let's say, and boy, Mostert can return kicks. You know, that takes a lot off of Duke Johnson's plate or maybe Justin Gilbert's plate, and we actually have a guy that can return kicks.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you have to, like, calculate the plus-minus. I mean, do you deal with a guy that, like, Justin Gilbert, who's maybe not as good of a kickoff returner as Mostert, but then you get to keep a fullback on your roster? I mean, it's all about cost-benefit, and that's what makes those final decisions on the roster so difficult to make.
All right, great stuff, guys. That's our position preview as we look at the running back's position. Before we hit a break here, a question coming in from Edward Hearn on Twitter. Wondering, with all the receivers, talk about position battles and everything and roster spots, with all the receivers, does Marlon Moore make it on special teams alone, or is he going to have to earn it as a wide receiver?
Not anymore. And the reason I say that, we drafted 14 players. two, maybe three of those guys will be considered starters or starter-ish or esque, I guess you could say, for the first few games of the season. Four or five of those guys will be, maybe even six, will be heavy contributors. Mm-hmm. There's eight more guys that have to legitimize their spot in this football team as a backup or third stringer with depth at a certain position, but have to be a core special teamer. So I think at this point right now, Marlon Moore's gotten expensive, and you've got young, fresh legs that their only opportunity to make this team is to be a baller on special teams.
Yeah, and I think he's a guy that Chris Tabor would go to bat for as much as trying to make the much, as much of a pitch
but he's
going to
reach a ceiling.
But I will say that Marlon Moore, from what I saw in the spring, had a good spring at wide receiver.
Yeah.
I think he, you know, he's getting coached up like everyone else at that position from Al Saunders. And when he had to play last year a little bit, he made a couple plays at the wide receiver position. But, yeah, I mean, I think for him, he's definitely not going to be comfortable saying, I can make this team just because of special
teams. And some of that comes with the absence of Jordan Payton and now Josh Gordon.
Right.
Yeah.
So you had those two guys in the mix. Neither of those participated in the spring, which is why Marlon Moore might have got bumped up, you know, the depth chart.
All right. Coming up here, we'll get a break in. Coming up, we will have our opponent preview. We'll take a look at the San Diego Chargers with Kevin Acey from the San Diego Union-Tribune. Also, he's a host on the Mighty 1090 in San Diego. We'll talk to Kevin next as Cleveland Browns Daily continues on ESPN 850 WKNR.